There are a variety of different supports that can be used to assist the quality of awakened awareness to be established, for the heart to be attuned to the present. Many and various different methods and tools. We've spoken a lot about mindfulness of breathing, wise reflection, walking meditation. Another object that can be used, that most people find accessible, is to use the faculty of hearing. This can be a support both for concentration, one-pointedness, a singleness of focus on a definite object, and also to support the quality of open awareness. Both the point which excludes and the point which includes. If you bring your attention to the faculty of hearing, listening closely behind the sound of my voice, perhaps you can hear in the background a continuous, high-pitched, subtle ringing tone, like a silvery sound, almost like the white noise that comes from a speaker when there's the microphone is switched on, but there's no one speaking through it. Continuous silvery hum. If you're able to discern this, this is something that can be used as a concentration object, as an alternative to mindfulness of breathing, or even the footsteps as we walk. This inner vibration is described in various different spiritual traditions or medical scientific appreciations. You can think of it as the activity of the nervous system. In the Sanskrit tradition, it's called nada or brahmanada, the divine sound. To the Greeks, it was called the music of the spheres. And various different traditions have used it as a focal point for meditation. In India, China, Middle East, Europe, people have noticed the presence of this inner vibration, usually experienced as a sound, but also can be something that is known as a felt sense, a tingling in the skin and the fingers, or an oscillation of the visual field, depending on which sense field has been most emphasized in our conditioning, our life. But for the majority of people, it's an inner sound. When the mind gets concentrated and the breath slows down, then you find that this inner sound, or nada, the Sanskrit word for sound, is continuous. You never hear it beginning or ending. It's always there, ever present. So it's even more consistent than the rhythm of the breathing. There's no turning points. No moments when the sound stops or goes quiet for any reason. So we can use this as a way to focus the attention to the exclusion of other objects. And if this is a path that is followed, then it's apparent that the more you concentrate on it, the clearer it becomes. And it also has an energizing effect. So the more you concentrate on it, the easier it is to concentrate. It's a positive feedback loop. So it can be a very direct, active, effective support for that concentration, the point which excludes. But we can also use it as a support for open awareness, letting it be the backdrop of all other experience. Just like as you can hear the sound of my voice, feel the sensations of the body, sunlight coming through the windows, the feeling of the cloth on your skin, the temperature of the air, different thoughts or feelings, memories, ideas that arise in the field of awareness. And the inner sound, the nada, is there as a backdrop, continuing ceaselessly. Like a screen against which all other perceptions are projected. So developing this inner listening, it can be a very active support for that quality of unentangled participating. It helps to prevent the entangling when a memory arises that's compelling or worrying. A sensation in the body is painful. Feelings of resentment and fear arise. Then the presence of the inner sound helps to keep it all in perspective. It's just a memory. It's a thought. It's a story. It's my favorite narrative. It's a painful feeling. It supports that realization of suchness, tatata. It's just this. It's just an exciting thought. A painful memory. It's just an uncomfortable feeling in my knee, my back, my shoulders. It's just this. It's this way. When Lumpo Sumedho would be teaching about this, he would encourage a refraining from analyzing or trying to figure out exactly what it is or theorizing too much, but simply putting it to work, letting it be a helpful presence, something that can be used as a support for liberation, for illumination, for unentangled participating. It's a sense object, it's conditioned, continually changes, oscillates and vibrates, modulates. So it's a conditioned sense object, but it does have qualities that evoke the attributes of the Dhamma itself. So it's a feature of the sense world, but it evokes that quality of timelessness, ever-present. Encouraging investigation. When you pay attention to it, it's easier to pay attention. Leading inwards. It supports that realization that this is all patterns of perception, patterns of organic change occurring within this field of experience. Recognize that the world happens here, is known here, in this space of awareness, of knowing. Apparent here and now, timeless, encouraging investigation, leading inwards, to be known by each wise person for themselves. I can't hear your sound, you can't hear my sound. It's up to each of us to pay attention to this inner vibration, if we wish. So it's a sense object, like the breath, the feeling of the breathing, but it has these attributes that evoke the qualities of Dhamma itself, that transcendent reality. So it's a sense object, but it lures the heart into the realization of the unconditioned. the heart is lured into that eternal, timeless reality through the qualities of this perception. Now, if on hearing these words you might think, I can't hear anything, what's he talking about? I thought that was the radiators. Isn't that just the audio system? So if it's not something that it's possible to discern, then don't worry about it. Well, perhaps it doesn't appear in the realm of hearing, but many years ago, Ajahn Sumedho was teaching this on a retreat, and a person who was there, who was a yoga teacher, said, I can't hear anything, but I feel it. It's a vibration in my skin, my fingers, my body. It matches exactly what you're saying, but it's not a sound. It's a very distinct sensation. One time I was teaching this approach, and again, a retreatant said, I don't hear anything, but I see this as an oscillation, a vibration of the visual field. And I said, what kind of work do you do? He said, oh, I'm a graphic artist. So if the eye channel has been developed, then it appears in the eye. If the body channel has been developed, it can appear in the body. Or if it doesn't appear at all, then don't worry about it. Just use the other modes and methods that we've all been talking about. If something is available, take it and use it. If it's not available, don't worry about it. This is a basic method of Dhamma practice. I'm considering the teachings that Ajahn Khemakha and Greg have been offering on the five subjects for frequent recollection. These contemplations of the fragility of this living system. Another teaching that comes to mind that is very helpful for us is where the Buddha's cousin, Mahanama, was asking him what advice to give to people when he's called to their bedside, called to the deathbed of his various folks of the Sakya kingdom. The Buddha said, well, first of all, ask that person, are you worried about your property, your possessions? The things that you feel you own. And if they say yes, you say, well, whether you worry about your property and the things you own or you don't, you're going to pass away anyway, so better that you let go of those worries. Then he asks, are you worried about your family, your children, your loved ones? If they say yes, they are, well, whether you worry about your family, your children, your spouse, your loved ones, or whether you don't worry about them, you're going to pass away anyway, so better that you let go. Develop a non-attachment, relinquishing. You're going to be saying goodbye anyway. So this is somewhat blunt advice, not very cuddly, but helpful. Whether you like it or not, here it goes. This is the small print that you neglected to read before. As Greg was explaining last night, that, didn't you hear the messengers? Didn't you listen to what the message was? So the Buddha suggests to his cousin, Mahanama, this kind of blunt advice is very helpful. Then he changes gear and he says, so if you're ready to let go of your family, your friends, your property, your these worldly attachments, then it's a good idea to, if you know, then relinquishing all of that, is your mind set on being reborn in the heavenly world? If they say, yes, I'm intent on being reborn in the heaven of the four guardian deities, then you should say to them, well, why settle for being reborn amongst the guardian deities? You could reappear in the Tavatimsa heaven, the heaven of the 33. And why settle for the heaven of the 33 gods when you could reappear in the Tusita heaven, the heaven of the contented? And so on, all the way up to the Brahma world. Then he says, and if they say, I intend on being reborn in the Brahma world, so why settle for being reborn in the Brahma world? Why not aim at not being reborn at all? Instead, one should fix one's mind on Sakaya Nirodha. So many of us are familiar with the term Sakaya Ditti, the view of the real person, or identity view, personality view. But Sakaya Nirodha, the Buddha suggests, the cessation of identity. Far better to fix the attention on Sakaya Nirodha than even being reborn in a realm of the Brahma deities. Then the Buddha makes a very interesting, very potent comment. There's a lay person who fixes their mind on Sakaya Nirodha in this way, there's no difference in their state of liberation than that of a monastic who's been an arahant for 100 years. No difference in the state of liberation. So that the ending of the body, the winding up of the faculties, it's a prime opportunity to let go. As these faculties and attributes fall away, possessions fall away, ownership falls away, it's the ideal opportunity to realize the cessation of identity. We never really were this person. The word person comes from the Latin persona, meaning a mask, that which the sound, sona, goes through, per, the persona. It's a mask. So the aging and winding up of the body is an opportunity to let go of all masks, to allow the heart to know its own nature, unborn, unoriginated, uncreated, unformed, being Dhamma. In the suttas you find a sequence that is quite regularly stated when the Buddha talks about the progress of development. First of all, hearing Dhamma, then conceptually understanding the Dhamma, then practicing the Dhamma, then stage four, realizing the Dhamma. Ajahn Chah would add a stage five, which is being Dhamma. So hearing Dhamma, comprehending Dhamma, practicing Dhamma, realizing Dhamma, and then being Dhamma. And in this, in reflecting on these words, it's helpful to appreciate, it's not as though we were not Dhamma already and then we became that, but that's what this has been all along. What aspect of the body and the mind is not an attribute of the natural order? Every aspect of the physical world, the mental world, it's all nature doing its thing. So being Dhamma is nature knowing its own quality. Dhamma aware of its own nature, its own quality. So this kind of realization is what the development of insight, the practice of Dhamma is pointed towards. This heart, this mind, it has always only been Dhamma. The citta is Dhamma, the heart is Dhamma. It's not a person, never was. It was just a really convincing appearance. The heart is Dhamma, not a person. So Sakaya Nirodha, the cessation of identity, is not an annihilation, but a liberation. The heart shedding its false boundaries, its false limitations. It has always been timeless, unborn, unoriginated, uncreated, limitless, profound, immeasurable, unfathomable. It's not like that wasn't here and now it's being acquired. It's always been what we are. We just didn't realize it.